Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Carson Vaughn, who's out with his new book, Zoo Nebraska, The Dismantling of an American Dream. Carson takes us to the tiny town of Royal, Nebraska. It sits about 100 miles west of Sioux City along Highway 20, and there was a little zoo there for about 20 years ago before a tragedy, among other things, brought it all crashing down almost 15 years ago. Carson, your subtitle, The Dismantling of an American Dream. Whose American dream are you referring to?
Well, I mean, I like to think it's probably a lot of our American dreams, but in this book particularly, we're talking about a man named Dick Haskin who grew up in Royal, and like many men and women of his generation, watched that first Jane Goodall documentary that aired through National Geographic and sort of became obsessed with the idea of working with great apes as his profession. And he followed that dream to pretty great lengths, ended up working with some primates at the Lincoln Children's Zoo, and one thing led to another. He found himself back in Royal, population 65, with a baby chimpanzee in a corn crib, and obviously that's not a great setup. So it kind of devolved from there. But the American dream is, particularly about Dick Haskin, but I think it's a more realistic version of the American dream, the American dream. You know, we always talk about it as if we're going to go from rags to riches, but once I learned more about Dick Haskin's story, that struck me as a much more realistic version of it. You know, somebody who had a big dream, shot for it, and fell just a little bit short.
Well, take me back to the first time you heard about Royal, Nebraska and the zoo. What did you know going into this project? I know it started as a college project.
Yeah, it did, and I really knew nothing about it. I'm from a small town called Broken Bow in the middle of Nebraska, and it's about 3,500 people. And even by, small-town Nebraska standards, Royal is tiny. And so I first learned about it. I was driving through on Highway 20 with my girlfriend, now wife, who was from that part of the state. And as we were passing through Royal, she just kind of shot her thumb out the window and said, "Hey, that's where Reuben got shot." And I had no idea who Reuben was. I didn't know that Reuben was a chimpanzee, that there was a zoo, and honestly, Royal is so small that as we were passing through it, I didn't even know that we were in a community. You know, it looks like just a couple garages, some machine sheds. I thought it was just sort of like a farm outlet, so I didn't know anything about it really at all when I started.
Well, you mentioned Reuben. Who's Reuben?
Reuben was sort of the star chimpanzee of Antelope County. Reuben had originally been loaned to the Lincoln Children's Zoo in the early 80s from the St. Louis Zoo, and Dick Haskin happened to be working at the Lincoln Children's Zoo at the time, and he started working with Reuben almost immediately and got sort of locally notorious for having taught Reuben some sign language. And so, kids in Lincoln and families were coming to watch this baby chimpanzee sign, and then, of course, once Dick brought Reuben back to tiny Royal, Nebraska, you had kids coming from schools all over the place, families, locals, everybody would just wanted to see Reuben.
Dick was working in zoos, and he didn't particularly like zoos, though, right?
No, I mean, that was one of the major ironies of the story, is that Dick had always, even from, a childhood, been sort of morally opposed to zoos. The reason he ended up working at one is because his dream sort of superseded that opposition. He knew he wanted to work with great apes, and the only way to get firsthand experience working with great apes is either to get incredibly lucky and find yourself in the field in Africa or wherever, or to take an early position working with great apes in a zoo. And so he kind of had to swallow his pride and dive into the Lincoln Children's Zoo.
So what was his idea? I mean, you've talked to Dick Haskin. What was his idea when he came back to Royal to start this roadside zoo?
Yeah. Well, I think to answer that, we have to back up just a little bit and say that when Dick was still in Lincoln, his boss at the Lincoln Children's Zoo sent him to a primatological conference in San Diego, and while there, Dick bumped into Diane Fossey, who was like the biggest primatologist of her day, and she actually ended up offering Dick an assistantship in Rwanda. So you have this farm boy who suddenly has this dream just right there in front of him, And just a couple weeks before he was set to go over there, that's when Diane Fossey was brutally murdered in Rwanda. And so Dick will be the first to admit now it was sort of some warped psychology, but he thought he could sort of carry on Diane Fossey's mission of primate conservation by, you know, getting custodianship of this baby chimpanzee and heading back to Royal, Nebraska, the place he knew best, and setting up what he was calling the Midwest Primate Research Center, and then sort of his umbrella organization was the Foundation for Primate Research. And so, you know, it was probably a pretty poor idea in the beginning, but Dick was coming at it from a pretty naive place, thinking that he could carry on that research and that conservation mission back home in Royal.
Did the zoo ever have a heyday?
Sort of. I mean, the zoo was never, by any means, a first-class facility, you know, but in the early 90s, Dick still had a little energy left in him. Kids loved coming to the zoo. They loved seeing Reuben. It was always a small facility, sort of a naturalistic feel, you know, but it seemed humble there for a little while before people started scratching beneath the surface and seeing some of the different players involved and seeing sort of the lack of protocols and that sort of thing. But in the early 90s, the zoo was still kind of in its upward trajectory. The Asheville fossil beds nearby had just opened. The Grove Lake Trout Rearing Station was nearby. And so that little pocket of northeast Nebraska kind of had a lot of potential going on in that moment.
So we know about Reuben. This is just a little 7-acre zoo. So what would people find if they had gone there?
Well, it depends on what years, you know, they had gone. In the beginning, it was literally a donated trailer home, a corn crib, and one baby chimpanzee named Reuben. If you fast-forwarded to the year, let's say 2000 or 2001, right after Dick Haskins stepped aside, you're going to find much bigger animals. You're going to find lions and tigers, and eventually they had 4 chimpanzees. And so, you know, they had some fairly large exotic animals there for a while, and then they also had more of what you would expect from a small farm town zoo. You know, they also had the petting goats, and they had a Chvalsky's horse, which was a 3-toed sort of rare horse. Some smaller animals like that.
I'm chatting with Carson Vaughn about his new book, Zoo Nebraska, The Dismantling of an American Dream. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. There's a quote, by the way, before we get back to the story, on the front cover. It says, "Stunning" by Buzz Bissinger, and I think I'm pronouncing that right, Bissinger, something. Friday Night Lights guy. And on the back, you got Alexander Payne. You've been published all over the place, all kinds of publications. I mean, The New Yorker, for God's sakes, one of the best magazines in the world. But when you see quotes like this from these well-respected authors, what's that do to your ego as a writer?
That's a great question, Brian. I mean, it felt good, obviously. You know, most of these people I had zero relationship to prior to sending them a book and asking, hey, will you read this for me? And so, you know, in some ways that feels a little better than sending it to your author friend who you might think is just being nice to you. You know, like Buzz Bissinger has no reason to be nice to some weird kid from Nebraska, you know. And so they feel really good as far as, like, giving me an ego or anything. I think the writing itself very quickly keeps me humble. You know, every time I start a new story, I feel like I'm starting over. You know, it's a brand new puzzle every single time. So I don't know when I'm going to start feeling like writing is easy. Probably never. But these quotes from, you know, big names, I don't think will change that.
Johnny Carson had a role with this zoo, albeit from afar, right?
Yeah, that's right. He played a small but, I mean, fairly significant role in that. Johnny Carson kind of kept the zoo afloat unintentionally. You know, the zoo would have closed naturally on its own multiple times over its 20-some year span. You know, it was never financially very feasible. They were on the brink of collapse multiple times. And every time they got right next to closing, somebody at the zoo would write a letter to Johnny Carson and say, hey, we need your help. And Johnny Carson, having come from Norfolk, Nebraska, which is nearby Royal, would send a check for $55,000 or $20,000 saying, here's the money. I want rural school children to have the same benefits that kids in bigger cities have. And so he was being fairly altruistic about it. But, of course, Johnny Carson at that point was in Hollywood, and he had never stepped foot inside the zoo. So I'm not totally sure he had any idea what he was donating towards.
Readers get hooked in with the story of the tragedy. And so can you kind of address what happened there with the tragedy and the fate of little Reuben?
Yeah, of course. Well, by 2005, Dick Haskin, the founder, had been out for about 4 years, A string of successors had come in after him to run the zoo, all of which, you know, failed to different degrees to keep the place running successfully. And by 2005, the place was being directed by the guy who ran the auto body shop across the street, and it was all volunteer labor, which is not a good concoction to have when you're talking about exotic animals. And in September, the 10th day of September, a volunteer forgot to lock the cage, and all four chimpanzees calmly stepped outside, and, you know, next thing you know, they have freedom, so they found their way into town, and you had a pretty harrowing, you know, couple hours of loose chimpanzees in this tiny town of 65 people, and with no protocol in place, the locals really had no choice, I don't think, but to shoot and kill three out of the four of them. The fourth one made his way back to his cage on its own, but it was a pretty tragic day, September 10th, 2005.
And obviously that was something that everybody that, I mean, around the country, well, Katrina hit right after that, so it probably would have been a bigger national story, but, you know, Katrina sort of took over the narrative. But as this whole thing went down, and you talked to Dick Haskin all these years later, what was it like for him to relive this part of his life?
It was terrible for Dick, and, you know, that affected the way I was able to report the story. Dick had been so traumatized by, you know, finding that Reuben had been shot and killed. I mean, Dick never had a family. He never had a wife or kids. He had devoted all of that time and love to Reuben. And so to drive into town one day and find that your baby chimpanzee had been shot and killed, that was very tragic. And so Dick, when I came along and started reporting, he refused to talk to me the first day, and then 8 years down the road, he was still refusing to talk to me. And so it really, I mean, it put Dick into a tailspin, and he kind of, you know, started living more of a hermit lifestyle out in the hills, trying to avoid that past.
I recently read Spying on the South by the late writer Tony Horowitz. His journalism, he's a northerner, took him to the southern part of the United States. Your journalism seems to be focused in the heartland. What is it about these regional stories that appear to such a broad base of readers all across the country?
I think a lot of it goes down to community, you know, and I think the writers that I know and love the best are those who can take you to a place that you're not familiar with at all, and by the time you're finished with that book, feel like you know these locals or you're part of this community. I remember reading Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil long before I had ever visited Savannah, Georgia, and just thinking, oh my God, I feel like Savannah is in my blood right now, you know? And I tried to do that in Royal. You know, I wanted people who were from Brooklyn or L.A. or Seattle or whatever to read about this tiny town they had no connection with and sort of feel like they understood that milieu all of a sudden.
Well, as I looked at the cover of your book, it reminded me of the cover of the book Postville. And Stephen Bloom wrote that book, and it was about a culture clash in a small town up in northeast Iowa. And so as you design these, you could have gone different ways with how you tell the story. You could have extrapolated this into a larger national story about how people react with each other, but you chose to keep it very localized. Was that a conscious decision, or is that just how it played out?
It was conscious to a degree anyway. There were multiple times when, I mean, you're absolutely right, I could have taken this book and used Royal as sort of just a representation of larger national issues or made some spin about the USDA's role as an oversight committee, or there were a lot of different angles I could have taken. But again, my favorite books were those ones that made me feel like I was just completely enveloped by this culture. And so I wanted Zoo Nebraska to read like a novel, and in a novel, you're not just going to leave all of your main characters behind to go talk about something else for a while, you know? And so it was a conscious decision to keep the lens squarely focused on Royal from page 1 to page 250, whatever, you know?
The citizens of Royal, it's a very isolated community. Are they aware of their isolation?
I would say yes and no. Some certainly are, and some aren't, you know? But that's the case for, I would argue that's the case for people in New York City, too, or any other larger community. You know, I mean, some people have an awareness of their surroundings, and others just have never really thought beyond those boundaries. And so some people in Royal certainly have been isolated by their community and have not probably had too many experiences to to see other cultures or to experience other cultures, and some ended up in Royal having left town for many years and come back. So it really just kind of depends.
All right. Well, this book is just an incredible insight into this community. And other than the tragedy, I'd never heard the rest of this story. The book is Zoo Nebraska, The Dismantling of an American Dream by Carson Vaughn. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold. And you can Google Carson and find some of his fantastic writing that has appeared in the various pages of publications you've heard of, New Yorker and Atlantic among them, some of the best publications in the world. Carson Vaughn, excellent work here. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thanks so much, Brian. This was fun.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
At least for a little while, sir, me and her, we had some fun. Now the jewel.